Okay, this is going to be a report of the January 82 trip to the Adrian Lab and Bill O'Neill. Basically, the trip can be broken down into four parts. One, my interaction with Mary Alice. Two, my personal interaction with Bill O'Neill. Three, our technical and spirit experiments. And four, the drive. I think that I will start first by talking about my interaction with Mary Alice, because I think that I can see that it sheds light on all of the things which are very much what makes up Bill O'Neill. Mary Alice met me at Bill's place. We were not able to talk about anything personally, but it was very interesting that when Bill would leave the room, the curtain was drawn, and she was able to just try to communicate to me that she really understood the whole situation. But it wasn't until the day I left that I found out more about her position with respect to Bill. And it was at our night out eating that she told me something about Bill which is very interesting. She said that Bill is like the cancer crab who now exists with a cracked shell. His shell has been cracked, and he is now very vulnerable. And to protect himself, he lashes out with violence and anger at anything that might threaten his position. This brings a great deal of perspective as to what this person is all about. And that was one aided thing. And another thing that is very important about Mary Alice and what she said about Bill, that she has a great deal of love for Bill, but she will not tolerate his drinking. He still has a drinking problem. It has not gone away. This past Christmas, 1981, he got drunk at Christmas again and spoiled it and ruined it, as she said. She does not want Bill to move in to the house where she is taking care of her father, the Campbell's residence. Because this way it's set up now, she told me that she can simply leave the situation if it becomes intolerable. And that way she can keep alive the possibility, which is in her heart, of one day Bill finally giving up his drinking and getting back to a healed or more harmonious place where his shell can heal up. Her efforts are beyond that of just being courageous and dedicated. She is Bill's pillar of strength, and she is what keeps the relationship alive. She does a lot to help Bill survive. With total enthusiasm and in the most sincere way. She appreciates Bill's creative energy and the things that he does to help other people out. She is, and does, I'm sure, encourages Bill to continue to work and to create and invent the things that he does. Another interesting thing to demonstrate her presence with respect to this whole situation, when we went out Thursday night to the Ponderosa, there were some interesting mix-ups with our meal, which kept us there a lot longer than most of the other people. It had to do with a meal mix-up. Bill decided not to order anything, and Mary Alice, with her savings coupons, had given me one. I ordered what I thought the savings coupon was for and what she thought it was for, which turned out not to be the case. And it is typical within these type of organizations. They have a single vector as to how things should work. If you deviate, it really messes things up. It was straightened out. Bill, again, did not eat any food in this particular instance. He had a big piece of pie, creamy, sugary pie, and some coffee, and complained of heartburn and other various things. Also, Bill constantly is trying to help and do things for lots of people, and it was fed back at the Ponderosa that he had taken his video camera equipment down there and had made up a little film for them during the Halloween time, and the girls really liked him. There were some special favorites there, and they really liked Bill O'Neill very much. While we were all sitting at the table, Bill said that, and Mary Alice agreed with him, that it was like we were sitting totally out of sync with all the people around us, and it was very true. They felt a definite difference between themselves and our state and the folks around us. They are both sensitive people. Anyway, following the meal, we went outside. Mary Alice felt something. She gave me her home phone number, and I could see it was important not to tell Bill this. This was confirmed when I spoke to her just before I left the Katanning area. She had felt that there was some sort of danger for me that particular night, and that Bill might get very violent. And she knew that at that time Bill wanted to drink. She did not tell me this until later on, the next day or two. It was 2 days later, I guess. It was Saturday when I called her. Again, she confirmed that me not disclosing the telephone number to Bill was a very wise thing to do. She also told me during this conversation on Saturday that she had grown up in an environment of no alcohol. And with Bill's drinking problem, this was a very big turnoff for her. So the situation as it stands now, with her living with her father and Bill living out in the house which the two of them had once lived in together, at the present time is just exactly the kind of situation that is needed for her to be able to tolerate this whole situation. She gave me all of her blessings and told me to have a safe trip. And I thanked her for her jams that she gave to me as a gift. And one other thing, too, is that when mention of alcohol, we're talking about alcohol, her whole emotional state just about boiled over. You could see this occurring, and it is something very deep-rooted within Mary Alice, and it disturbs her to a great extent. So the situation, again, with Bill is one in which Mary Alice is going to keep until Bill finally gives up his drinking. Okay, that'll be the end of the Mary Alice part. There'll be other mentions of her throughout the talk about Bill and his emotional state and his condition, his positions, and his expressions of self-worth and his expressions of himself. So I will try to approach Bill O'Neill, this Bill O'Neill section of this report, in a somewhat chronological way, but don't count on it. Let's start off with my arrival at Bill O'Neill's. One of the things that happened when I first arrived is that Bill came walking out, and he said to me that he was worried. The word worried was to be used quite extensively for the next 4 days. Bill, that's one of Bill's things, is that he is worried about everything. And this seems to be a reality. One of his realities is that he is constantly worried about everything. When I walked up to the dogs, I felt absolutely no animosity or anger from any of the animals and immediately started petting them. And he was telling me to back off, but you could see that the dogs were demonstrating their feelings that I was a person that they could trust. And this demonstration right off the front end was probably an excellent introduction for Bill as to who I was. He just brought me into the house and said we should sit down, just warm up and start chatting. And so I came into the place and walked into the Carbon Castle. And that is one of the interesting things, is that place is loaded with carbon. It's got carbon all over the place. And interestingly enough, I'm going to mention this in the technical section, so I'll let that go right now. So Bill, we came in there, just sat down, relaxed, and he told me about how he had expected to see this physicist and all this sort of thing, and that he was using a lot of on the first day he was using a lot of young people jargon. He was saying yes man and all this sort of thing, and I just let that go. That lasted in fact for 1.5 days, and then it was discontinued. He repeated many times about my introduction to him as being this physicist. But immediately after that, he started to mention the drawing that I had made up for the SpiritCom Center, and that it is my feeling that that is what brought this link about. Once he saw that I was a cartoonist of sorts, he must have felt some sort of affinity in that I wasn't what to him about who I was. He had read my resume and he said he was impressed and all this sort of thing, and he had let Dr. Mueller review my resume. He immediately then started to show me, in the midst of us cooking and doing various things, some of his cartoons, and one of them he had put up on the wall right by the coffee urn, the hot water. That was our hot water source, and that was on all the time. And then he started to show me various things on the wall. He wanted to bring that out right away and showed me all these drawings all over the room of the various faces, the transfigurations that had come through in the wall. He showed me the master and little girls and the sheriff and some people that he had drawn on the floor, and these were all over the place, and there were some others that were just starting to develop in other various places. And there was just starting to interweave in the beginning of all of this some of his negatives about metascience, about George Meek, and George feeling that he had to be in control. And this started just to filter in the beginning of all of this. And so the next part of that time was spent listening to Bill's poems, listening to Bill's stories about his hearing aid and how it had helped many people, to listening to stories about his healing of a little girl, which avoided the need for an operation. And he expounded, I would say, he repeated these stories at least several times during this afternoon session. He also quickly demoed his excellent abilities at handling the shortwave radio. And he then started to read some poems to me, and he also indicated that he wanted to hear a little bit of my personal life, and I spoke a little bit about my personal life. I wasn't hiding anything at all from him. The important thing here, now let me get into this. One of the things, and one of my motivations at that point, is I realized that I had to go along with Bill, with respect to everything, not to judge him in any way, and let him do whatever it was that he was and wanted to do. He fed back that he wasn't sure of me at all, and that sort of thing. And with all of these things playing in his mind, one thing would come in as either a memory feedback, or something would come in that he'd pick up psychically, or some guide would come along, or one of his Indian friends would start speaking to him. And so we see this personality coming at you as though it was almost like an organ, with each one of the tones being played singly, and the music was so slow. In other words, one tone here, one tone there, an A, and then an F sharp. Okay, with respect to Bill's personality, that it was a song, a melody, which was being played so slowly that it was very difficult to hear. There was this lack of continuity in what Bill did. It was very choppy, discontinuous. He would pop off into Tina mode, and he would start talking to Tina. Tina seemed to be Bill's other friend. It's more than that. It was more than just another friend. It was like somebody that he could talk to. It was like going to home base for him to get himself back down to a ground position. If he went flying off too far in one direction, Tina would pop in and ground him. There were other things in his jargon that would always be present. One of the most dominating phrases would be, "Please forgive me." He would start talking about something, boom, it would stop, another tone in the organ would start to play, and at that point he would say, "Please forgive me." Then he would say something, basically, which would be represented by that one tone, and then boom, that note would stop, and he would say, "Please forgive me," boom, and then another tone would start. And sometimes he would say, he would stop talking about something, and then it would be as though he was listening to somebody speak. And it wasn't as though Bill was hearing all of these things. But I questioned him about that later on. I said, "Do you hear these things audibly?" And he says, "No, not quite. It's just these thoughts come to my mind." So he's not hearing these voices in his head as he would hear me speak or Mary Alice or the dogs bark. But he admitted to me later on that he does not hear these things. This was still while his curiosity of who I was up, and before the claws of the crab started to really to lash out and grab and to in any way again he was staying in a protected posture. He was very cautious and careful, this first day again was much of him just showing me all the things that he wrote, reading poetry. He sang me a couple of songs, and they were very fine songs, and he would then tell me about how great he was as a singer, and that Kentucky did not pick up his song. Yes, he complained about the fact that this particular song was to be some theme song for something, and that Kentucky should have taken this. And again, there was a again, one tone at a time and constantly changing. If you could put together all these various tones, then you might start to see some kind of continuity with respect to who is Bill O'Neill. But this first day, he had told me that he wanted to take me out to dinner. And I discovered another thing is that he didn't listen at all. I would say something like to him, and then he wouldn't hear it. It's like he was not paying attention, there were too many other things that he had to get across. And he was running around and running around. I told him, "Look, Bill, I've got 5 days here. It's all right." And he told me that he had been up for 2 days and he only had 3 hours of sleep and he was very tired. And he had made all of these preparations. Well, the preparations were that he had swept his floor, and he had actually cleaned up the house. He gave me a little guided tour. He showed me my toilet and my bed, and then took me up to the lab. And the laboratory was not in any kind of state of well-being. It was there was stuff strewn all around, and it he had probably had started to prepare the what you call spirit presence detector, and I want that to be strongly noted here, and in the technical section I will delineate and expound on this. It is not a spirit presence detector. It is a lot more, and I will talk about that later. It's a little teaser, if you will. Anyway, we went off. We were to now go off into town. He was going to take me to the Ponderosa and stop at Thoroughfare because he wanted to pick up some things. So, once again, I must reiterate this. I had made a decision to go along with Bill and not to judge him in any way. In fact, I made sure that I was just going to be there and be with him, let it flow for whatever it was worth, and to see what was going to happen. Okay, so we left to go to the Ponderosa. We stopped at Thoroughfare, and of course he already told me about his affinity with children. Well, also he had also told me about his Pearl Harbor days, and he also talked about the Russians and the jamming of the stations and a lot of negatives with respect to the Russian governments, etc., etc. And he told me about his knee problem. He showed me his leg where it had been burned badly and that he had taken some cartilage from a lamb or something of that nature and had been replaced into his body. So that he could now have a more normal leg. He also told me how great his physical body was, that he had a body of a young boy and a face of an old man. Well, when he picked up his shirt to show me his belly, I could see that his skin was smooth and all that sort of thing, and he didn't have any wrinkles on his skin. But some of the age was there on his body very clearly. And there was the stretched sacky away of his skin and other various things like that were very clearly that of not a younger person. And I went right along with it and said, "Sure do look like you got a young body, Bill." So off we went into town. And Bill, again, would pop between these tones, constantly changing between a story about his earphones or a guide coming through or somebody talking to him, then bang, talking about the beautiful mountains, and then telling me about the seeds and the other various things that the Indians had told him about healing and curing things. And again, there were more negatives about GM thrown intermittently between in between. Again, another tone about GM and a tone about Dr. Mueller and a tone about his work and a tone about his poems, and bang, 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 back and forth, constantly going in and out of this whole thing. And of course, with the phrase, "Please forgive me," always interleaved without this. Oh, another thing too is that if he was disclosing some kind of information to me, at the end of it he would say, "Do you understand?" And that was done at a almost pedantic level, but not quite. So, driving into town, showing me the mountains, and also very scared, telling me, be careful, watch out for this curve, somebody can slide off. And I said to Bill, I tried to reassure him that I was a good driver and I was going to be very careful, and I drove very slowly to make sure that he didn't get scared. And we just drove through, and he would point out various places, and then we would go over these bumps, and he'd say, hello, so-and-so, and he told me about the fact that these bumps had been filled up, and they had been given particular names, and they would always say hello whenever they went past these places. And so we went up the hill to Thoroughfare. And then we went to the Ponderosa, and we had some shrimp, and he had some shrimp, and that was really fine. And then we came back, and we went back to the house, and we stoked up the fire and all that sort of thing. And then he told me he was really tired, and he had to go to sleep, and that nothing would disturb him, and he was going to lay down on the floor and go to sleep. So he proceeded to do that. I thought a while about what was happening, and I said to myself, this looks like an evening which will be very long and extensive. I better take a nap. I'm going to stay along with him. If I don't stay along with him, then I'm not going to be able to experience this other part of Bill O'Neill. So I went upstairs to the lab, and I started a fire, and I looked around, and I saw all this heat leaking out of these big holes in the wall. So what I did was, is I put a big piece of plastic up over the holes, sealed it off, and I took one of those white drapes and I put it over the doorway. Those two things together helped to keep a pretty good temperature in that room, and I'll tell you about that later. So I, after starting the fire, I went downstairs and I took a nap. At about 12 midnight, I woke up. I must have had a sleep for maybe 3 hours. I woke up. He woke up. Started to get things cooking. Had a little bit of chow. We went upstairs to the lab. That experience will be talked about in the technical section. At 7 a.m., we came back downstairs, and he felt like having a little bit more food, whatever. But then he told me that he had to get into town again because he had to get some more stuff at the store and some other things that he had to do at the bank, and he had to go see Miss the banker, and he told me about the fact that he had helped this very deaf person who was a friend of the banker's, and that he had done some healing on the back, and the back pains had gone away. And we had to get to the bank, so we set the alarm clock for 1 o'clock. And so I had 5 hours sleep. I got up, I had some breakfast, and I went big potty. That was another thing, Bill's expression of big potty. And he brought in his little oversized paint container, which he told me, amazingly enough, doesn't smell, does it? And he would tell me that George had to go outside. I couldn't sit in the room with Joe Fryley and all this sort of thing. And, pardon me, I'm getting tired. I'm actually yawning because I'm thinking about how tired I was at that point. But anyway, we were up, and I ate breakfast, and boom, we were off once again to town. And there again was a continuous discontinuity. It would appear to most as though this man had a great deal of discontinuity. It would appear to most people that this guy was really off the wall, and I mean off the wall. That's a very interesting expression. But I saw what appeared to be a man who had his various states were set up in various ways. His emotional body was his emotional self. I think I could mention this at this point. His emotional self was keyed off of his earlier life. And that was his very young life. He had a great deal of love and emotion and compassion. And so here we are driving in once again to town. We get to the bridge, we go over the bridge and into town. And he says to me, yeah, we have to go to the bank. He's got to get some money. No, he had to drop off a hearing aid, get some money. He does this, introduces me to this very nice man who runs the bank. Man has a very gentle energy, looked like felt like a very good man. And the man definitely appreciated Bill in a very quiet way. After we left the bank, though, Bill had to continue prodding me, his claws coming out and going, prod, 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 prod. See? You see? Look how this, look, did you see how the man appreciated what I did? He didn't say that exactly. He said, what did you think, Mr. Campbell? Yeah, he sure did. You look what, he really appreciated my work, didn't he? Et cetera, et cetera. And then he said, oh, why don't we go over and have a beer? Now, remember, I told you, I'm going to reiterate this, I'm going to say this again. I had to go along with Bill on all these areas. Otherwise, if I started to lay some kind of judgment down on this tricky situation, I could have really blown it from where I was standing. And I would not have been able to really find out the things that I did find out. And I will tell you one other thing, and it's a nice, I'm going to give you a little bit of a teaser, is that Dr. Mueller is an incredibly clever man. And what he did is that he dropped onto Bill enough information that if someone looked closely, they could really see more, even though Bill had not been told that directly. And I have a feeling that's exactly what Dr. Mueller did. Because, if you will recall, in the tape number 10, the videotape number 10 that was delivered here to MetaScience, Dr. Mueller very clearly stated that he may not be here very much longer. And that with all of the things that Bill was moving about in his world, popping up one tone here, popping into another tone here, you know, his mind going one place, his mind going another place, playing back this, hearing that, doing this, doing that. Dr. Mueller had quite a difficult task in trying to leave behind the information necessary to continue this work. Okay, that's a little teaser of more things to come in the technical session. Okay, so we popped into a bar. We sat down, and Bill had a double-double Corbett's whiskey and a beer chaser. I had a beer. and a draft beer. And I had two draft beers, and Bill had four shots of Corbett's. Now, this is Wednesday. Four shots of beer. Four shots of whiskey. And then he was starting to tell me another tale. A tale about his secret agent man. This is very important. There was a time in his life that he was working for the government as an undercover man. This is what he told me. But he had not stopped working as an undercover man. He still was. And there were people still passing messages to him. This one aspect of Bill I consider to be his fantasy. A fantasy that brings him back to a time when he was a person whose tones worked smoothly together. I think Bill is aware of the discontinuities in his own being. And he protects this. And also, I think that it's almost like he's a chameleon, that he puts up this, he keeps changing colors, boom, 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 to keep the outside confused. Remember, he is vulnerable. He feels vulnerable. He's got a cracked shell. He jabs and he does everything and to keep that crack unexposed or away from those about him. And that's everybody. Even Mary Alice, because she witnesses it herself. If she could not see that, then he would not be that to her. And therefore, she would be the only one person that he truly felt open with. But there is no living soul right now that he's truly open with. He is constantly protecting himself. He's constantly vulnerable. He's constantly changing colors. He is a chameleon. In his way of presenting himself to the world. I'm actually feeling right now that energy when I was there. It's almost like a shifting back and forth between trees and like changing costumes. Okay, that's part of it. And again, I don't know if my... my analogy to an organ is with respect to what you see dumped out to the outside world is good, but if you can just try to get the gist of it, the fact that a very slow, what he's done is he's chopped himself up and he plays one tone, which you can see, but he plays it intermittently, and you might only get maybe five pieces of the one tone in 2 days, and you might get 10 pieces of another tone in 2 days. And I see about maybe 6 or 7 tones, okay, that comprise Bill. And they've been kind of like one might think they've been randomly thrown out. And I basically think that's how he's tried to build up the camouflage. He is conscious, or subconscious mind has presented this changing of costumes, popping behind these trees, putting on a new camouflage, and then coming out. And this is a technique which he feels protects him and keeps the opponents confused. I think what disturbed him about me is that I never felt confused. I allowed myself to be with him. My aura and my heart stayed open at all times. And I would have to feel and empathize with various emotions with him. And there were sad times and some laughing times. There were violent times and angry times. And there were times of great brilliance. There were times of great sight. These parts of Bill, the genius of Bill, this genius was the gift, as part of his gift that he's been given. And this genius, this part, is where Bill, I believe, really is. And this part only comes out once every 4 days. So here you have all these other parts coming out 5-6 times in 2 days, maybe 10-20 times in 4 days, and the genius only comes out maybe once every 3 days, something of that nature. I was able to see it, though, in a particular cycle. I was able to see it about 3 times over the 5 days. And we're at the bar, and he tells me that, oh, I'm not a drunk. I'm here for a purpose. I'm here because I'm a secret agent man. I'm here to gather information. I've come here to gather information. I'm not going to tell you, Bruce, what that is.